older. You know, Peter had already worked several times through this book in telling different groups of people to be submissive to other groups of people. He told Christians to be submissive to the government in chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. He tells slaves to be submissive to their masters in chapter 2, verses 18 to 25. Can you imagine that? It doesn't say be submissive to your kind masters, but also be submissive to those who are evil, who are cruel. All masters. He tells wives to be submissive to their husbands in chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Now he commands the new or the younger, the Greek word there can be translated either new or younger, men to submit to the older leaders of the church. You could say elders. It doesn't actually say that there, but you could say elders. That's who he's referring to. And the word there, submit, we've talked about this before. It's the Greek word hupotasio, and it's a military term. It means to rank under, to line up under, to willingly and respectfully place ourselves under the leadership of the pastors of the church, the elders of the church, the overseers of the church. And what would that include practically, if you think about it? That means we would listen to their advice if they give us advice. That would be that we'd be open to what they say. It might be that we watch their lives and we imitate the example that they're living before us. It might be that we accept their decisions without second-guessing them. Maybe there are some things that influence their decisions that we don't know about. And so that's why they decided that way. And respect their years of experience would be another thing we should count into those things. So why we should listen to the leaders of the church, being submissive to them. You know, when communism fell in the Czech Republic, many, many young people came to know Christ. I mean, it was amazing, really. You know, 40 years of communism, not being allowed to have a Bible, not being allowed to travel, not being allowed to go to a church. Suddenly it was open, and evangelists came in, and they shared the gospel with all kinds of people, and many, many people accepted Christ. And we were involved, Cindy and I, when we went there, we were involved with a Bible-believing group. And there were a lot of young people in their church. And it was an exciting place to be. But a lot of them were very young and untrained in the Lord. Very excited, but untrained. And while we were there, there was a untrained teacher who rose among them. And, you know, he criticized the leadership of the church. And, you know, sometimes he was correct in what he said. You know, communism had a way of deforming people where they would have two lives. They would live two separate lives. You know, at work, you would be this way for the Communist Party. Then at home, you'd be like this. So duplicity, you know, being two-faced was kind of normal. And when you get in a church, you can't really be that way and be an elder, a leader of the church. You know, you have to be, you know, what you are before God is what you are before the people all the time. Well, sometimes he was correct, and sometimes he was incorrect. Sometimes he was harsher than he should have been. But after a while, this group split, and a lot of the young people went to the other side of Prague and started their own church. And Cindy and I were unique because we had friends in both groups. And so I would go and speak with each group. I would speak with one group in the morning and then go in the afternoon and speak with the other group. And then sometimes we would travel at other times and go to small villages where there might, or larger towns, maybe 100,000 people, and there'd be one church and one family, meaning that whole town. And we'd go there and speak with that group of people. It was unique. But after a while, this young leader became even more radical. And he started criticizing, guess what? The new group that came out with him, because they weren't able to provide the support that he needed. They weren't able to finance him. He wanted to be a full-time pastor. And eventually he left that group, and he went a part of, now he's today, he's part of a non-biblical, like mainline church, where they pay him a salary. The people who followed him split up and joined other churches, or don't go to any church today. So, you know, that group would have been better off if they would have just listened to the leaders of the church. They weren't perfect. We know none of our leaders are perfect. It's easy to find things that I do wrong, or leaders of any church do wrong. But in the long run, it's better to obey the church leaders that we have. And we saw that through experience. So being submissive is really a key role for young men to play in our church. They're examples to us when they do that. And many times they have great ideas and better ideas than us old guys do. But you have to wait your turn and be submissive to the leaders who are currently in place. So that's the first thing. The first attitude, godly attitude to develop during hard times is to be submissive. The second thing is to clothe yourself with humility. Look at verse 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5b through verse 6. All of you, clothe yourself with humility towards one another, because God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. You know, think of the main verb there. It says, clothe yourself. You know, be characterized by this. Be characterized by humility. You know, when somebody thinks of you, they might think, that guy is really a humble guy. That gal is really a humble gal. And it means to tie something on yourself. And sometimes slaves would do that. They would tie an apron upon themselves before they would go to work. And that's what it means. Clothe yourselves with humility. Make it a big part, an important part of your life, something that people see in you as they think about you. And to be humble, this verse, both verses, parts of this verse, the verse and part of the verse, talk about being humble. And it means to have minds that are willing to serve, to do the lowest level of jobs. You know, humility in the first century was not something that was looked up to. It was kind of something that was despised. And the only people that you could get to be humble, usually, if they weren't Christians, were slaves. You could force those people to be humble because of slavery. It's the only way you could get away with it. And to enforce this idea of being humble, Peter quotes Proverbs 3:34, which is listed there for it. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. God is unquestionably against the proud, but blesses and gives grace to the humble. You might just say that as God takes special delight in just everyday common folks. That's who he delights in. Therefore, humble yourselves. And the idea there is to do this voluntarily. And it's too that way. It's that way too with our wives. You know, the Bible never tells husbands, go out there and tell your wife to submit. You know, submit, lady. It doesn't tell husbands to do that. It tells wives to voluntarily submit to their husbands. And it's the same thing here. Voluntarily submit. Clothe yourself with humility. accept whatever comes from God, from his mighty hand, from his power. When it talks about God's mighty hand, it's talking about his power and his timing. And he will lift you up. He will lift you up. We were on the trail yesterday, and my youngest grandson tripped over one of those roots down there. And we reached down several times and lifted him up. And he was able to do it himself, but he was especially encouraged because somebody came along and lifted him up. And we're encouraged too when God lifts us up, aren't we? When God takes us out of our trials and our sufferings. Well, how can we illustrate humility? I have a couple things here I want to talk to you about. And I have a jar, first of all. And I want you to imagine that this jar represents God's will. God's will, God's plan for your life, God's purpose for what he wants you to do. What makes God happy is this thing right here, this jar. We'll leave that there. And then we have two other things. We've got a rock. It's a real rock. Rocks can be a very positive thing if they're in the part of your house where they need to be. But they could be a very negative thing too if somebody's throwing them at you. Or if your heart is like a rock, then it's a very negative thing. And I also have a sponge here, a sponge. So when you think about these represent people's hearts, you know, should your heart be like a rock or should it be like a sponge in relationship to God's will? Well, let's see how that works. You take a person's heart, God takes a person and their heart, and its heart is a rock. And he tries to put them into his will, his plan for their life. What happens? Does it fit? Can't get it in there. Not going to work. That's not going to work. Well, let's try the sponge. The sponge is pliable. It's, you know, it represents humility, that you're humble. You're humble before God. So you allow God to make changes in your life. You allow God to twist and turn and make changes. And you allow God to, you know, put you through pain at times so that he gets you to where you need to be. Well, let's see if we can stuff this in here and see if it'll work. If a heart is humble before God, then there's a much greater chance that God will be able to get his purpose done in us that he would like to do. That's where we want to be, isn't it? We want to be in the center of God's will for our lives. And that takes humility. We have to clothe ourselves with humility. So submit. Being submissive is one thing we should do. One attitude we should develop. A second attitude is clothing ourselves with humility. And the third thing is trusting God. Trusting God. Very simple things, aren't they? Not complicated. Easy to express. Hard to do. Trusting God. Verse 7. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. He uses this word casting on. And that literally means throwing upon something or upon something, someone else. It's used in Luke 19:35 of throwing a blanket over an animal. But, you know, Peter was a fisherman. And you can imagine the stuff that he would have to throw every day on his ship. You know, to go out there and catch fish, and you'd have to be throwing stuff, casting stuff. So you probably got pretty used to that action, you know, throwing stuff, casting stuff onto his ship. Or if you're going to catch fish, what do you got to throw in the water, on the water? I mean, we'd do it this way, wouldn't we? But this guy's a professional. He has a net. So he's casting the net. And you would do that many times during the day. So there's a word that Peter was accustomed to cast something on something else. And it's a decisive action that he's telling us to do. It's decisive. And as you read through 1 Peter, there are many verbs in that book that are very decisive action verbs. And not long ago, I was with my oldest son, David, and he has like a 25-foot fishing boat that he goes out on the lake in Indiana with, several lakes. And it has a pretty powerful motor, you know. We're skipping across the lake like this. I said, David, you know, we're a long ways from the bank. You know, if you flop this thing, we're not going to get back. But Noah, my grandson, serves as his first mate on that boat. And when David needs something done, he just commands an order to Noah, and Noah automatically does it. And because he knows that there's limited time that he has to get the things done. And if you wait too long, you know, the boat's going to be back past the place where you needed that command finished. And so I think Peter was kind of used to that because of working on as a fisherman. He made commands, expected them to be obeyed. It's decisive action. Cast on. Cast all your anxiety on him, on Jesus. It doesn't say just cast some of your anxiety, does it? You know, in the Bible, the word all means all, and that's all that all means. So everywhere you find it, it's inclusive. Everything is included in that. Anxiety, we could translate that, our discontentment, our discouragement, our despair, our pain, our sufferings. And verse 7 is the means by which we humble ourselves under God's mighty hand. We humble ourselves by asking God to do something for us. We humble ourselves by casting all of our anxiety upon him. We come to the point in our lives and we say, I can't do this. I want God to help me with this. So we cast it upon him. We give it to him. We trust him with it because we know that he can take care of it. And we know that he'll do it as the verse ends, because he genuinely cares for us. It's genuine. It's passionate. It's long-suffering, this care that God has for us. Casting all of our cares, all of our anxiety upon him. And I thought about this verse a little bit this week, and one of the things we've been doing is doing some construction on our house. And we started this process a year and a half ago, and we found a contractor that we wanted. And he didn't come right away because he's good. You know, he has like 5 or 6 months of work ahead of him. And so you have to plan ahead of time. And a lot of people, when I told them, you know, they started saying, you know, has that guy come yet to work on your house? I said, no. He said to me, well, you know, I think you should find somebody else. You know, there are other good guys out there that could do this. And we said, no, we want that guy to come and work on our house. And we were willing to wait. And so we cast all of our anxiety, you know, this idea that we might be being blown off and being seen as kind of naive by this guy, as saying, no, we trust this guy. He's a Christian. We want him to be working on our house. Whatever. It doesn't make... If it's 5 years, we'll wait 5 years. We cast all of our anxiety upon Jesus because we knew this guy was faithful and he would come. And he finally did come. And what a testimony to all of our neighbors. All of our neighbors are asking. You know, they're coming over and talking to us. They're watching this guy and they said, man, this guy is wonderful. I've never seen anybody work like that. I've never seen the things he's able to do. What a testimony he is. So I talked to him this week. I told him that I was going to be preaching on this passage. And I said, you know, it says there, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. I said, "Dave, as you worked on our house, you know, you tore out all of our walls underneath our house and you put a new foundation under it. And that's kind of tricky. Was there anything that you did that was kind of iffy, that was kind of dangerous, and you weren't so sure it was going to work out?" He said, "Well," and I had Tom Grimm down there, so I showed him this wall this week. But he said, "Well, when we started in your crawl space, there was a half a wall in one place. And we were going to leave that half a wall, and then we were going to build a retainer wall so that half a wall would not jut out. So we had to cut the dirt out and then go flush down along that wall." And he then, the next day after he did that, he built a form so he could pour the cement in there and hold that wall in there. And, you know, he just got all that dirt out of there, and it was flush, and it started to rain. And he said, "George, I went home and I prayed all night that when I come back the next morning, that your house won't be down in that hole. We'll have to jack that thing up somehow." And, you know, he came back the next day, and it was still up. It was still up. So they built the forms. They called the cement company. They got that wall poured, and it got hard, and it's holding that wall up today. And that's why we waited. That's why we waited for this guy. Because we knew that he would, like us, cast all of our anxiety on him, on Jesus, because he cares for us, he cares for you, he cares for me. Well, what about you? Are you old like me and you make lists? If you're not today, you will someday, count on it. Someday you'll make lists just like me. We all need those kind of things. Do you have any attitudes in your life that God is working on? Especially during this time. Especially when it's not safe, you know, to go to all these places like we used to do. Is God working upon any of the attitudes that you have in your life? How is God changing you as he works on those attitudes? How is he changing you? He's still changing me. And I hope my sons and my grandsons, granddaughters saw some of those changes the last couple of days as they spent some time with us. And I hope they were all good changes. What are some of the hard things you are facing in your life right now? If you're facing hard things in your life right now, you need to put verse 7 into practice. Cast all of your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Let's pray together. Father, we do thank you for your love for us. Thank you for the great thing it is to be your kid.